Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
So welcome to Indie Birth's Taking Back Birth series of podcasts. Through the series of podcasts, we've been exploring pregnancy and in particular, self-sufficient pregnancy and birth. And today we have a guest by the name of Kara, who recently had an unassisted birth. And when I came upon Kara's story just online, there was just something about the way she told her story that was really empowering and was exactly the kind of message that we try to get across on Indie Birth every day. So when I see somebody like that, I'm just so excited and I want to talk with them and I want to share the talk with all of you. So Kara is our guest today and she's just going to start by introducing herself and telling us what she wants us to know.
All right. Hi. I guess I don't know, a little about me. I became really involved in the, really interested in really enthusiastic about the natural birth movement when I had my daughter. She's 2 years old, 2.5 now. And I had a home birth with her with a midwife assisted as my first. And that was empowering. And I did that because I knew from the get-go that I didn't want to have anything to do with the hospital. I've had a kind of an adversity to the hospital industry, medical industry from early on childhood that was infused in me from my parents and whatever. So I knew from that time I didn't want to have anything to do. So we did what we felt was most safe middle ground, which was just have a midwife there. Mm-hmm. But I was adamant that I didn't want her to be associated with a hospital either. So I sought out the most independent, not underground, but independent mm-hmm. midwife here in Missouri that I could.
Baby sounds.
And that experience was awesome, and she taught me a lot. She was a wonderful midwife. She was very hands-off and very anti. She told me straight up, there's not going to be any oxygen. There's not going to be any interventions. We're not going to bring any drugs. So you better be committed to this idea right from the get-go. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's exactly what I want.
That's awesome. I mean, that's so rare nowadays, yeah. You know, that midwives even utter those words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even midwives tend to want to be kind of, you know, a little more dictating than
right.
And it should be, I think. But we went the midwife route because it was my first birth, you know, and I wanted an unassisted, but I wasn't confident being a first-time mom, you know?
Right, yeah.
But the moment we had her, my partner and I looked at each other and we're like, we could do this on our own. Like, you know, there's nothing that she did here that we couldn't do. And so that was just it. I said, if we have another one, we're doing it by ourselves. And that's just it. And lo and behold, we did. So we had my son here 2 weeks ago, Sunday, on the 20th, and was unassisted pregnancy all the way through. No medical attention, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And then labor just started. And it was quick. It was 6 hours and just done. And it was so natural and so awesome and so empowering. And I'm just kind of breezing over it. But
yeah, well, we'll talk in more detail about it for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the exciting part. I think everybody loves to hear the birth stories, you know,
yeah.
For sure.
When it was done, I just wanted to convey that there was an adrenaline rush and something was said online that I picked up that free birthing is addictive. It's like to getting a tattoo or like I went skydiving once and I had the exact same feeling when I was done skydiving as I was the moment I had him. I was like, I want to do that again.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true though. And I think, you know, that's something almost scientific that women could realize about birth is that the physiological process is really so perfect that, you know, there is an adrenaline rush. That's what gets the baby out. And, you know, the oxytocin levels are so high that for everybody in the room, it's just an exhilarating experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome. I was just so empowered and so just, oh, I just wanted to share that feeling with everyone. And I just, I'm,
Yeah, well, and 2 weeks after, you're still feeling it at least a little bit, I know.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. For sure. So let's go back and talk about your first pregnancy a little bit. I think it's really interesting how, you know, you did make that leap from the first to the second. So I don't know, the first pregnancy, tell us, like, what was going through your head? I mean, you had never had a baby before. So how did you approach prenatal care, even with this midwife?
It was very late. She came on board to my pregnancy when I was about 27, 28 weeks along. Okay. So that's pretty late as it is, you know?
Right.
And that's because it took me so long to find the right person.
Right.
And she said, when we connected, she's like, well, let me pray on this for a couple weeks and see if we're right for each other. She's a Native American, half Native American as well. So that was really appealing. And I was like, okay, yeah, pray on it.
Sure.
So then we just approached it very, everybody was, you know, up my butt, so to speak, obviously, family, friends, everybody was like, just go to the doctor, Kara, you're being selfish, you're being irresponsible.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. That's
huge, huge.
So how did you deal with that the first time? I mean, because you didn't know, you hadn't been through it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, that's 99% of women in this country. They're scared into medical help because they think they need it during a normal pregnancy.
Because everyone tells you that you're insane for not having even prenatal care or, you know, going to a doctor. How dare you? I don't know. I've always been pretty stubborn, so that's in my favor. But, you know, I just fought tooth and nail. I felt like I was fighting through my whole pregnancy with everyone I knew. And unfortunately, a handful of people who were really close to me stopped talking to me. And that's just something that has to happen. You know, if you're adamant in your decision and you know what's right for your spirit and your family and your life, there comes a point in time, a juncture where people are going to cut ties with you if you don't, you know, if you don't follow their path, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I spent my whole pregnancy pretty much head to head with all my family and all my friends, and I had to kind of stop talking to a lot of people for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. They just think it's crazy. I mean, it's hard to even explain to, the average person, even if it's a family member, why you're not checking in with the doctor. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they just worry for your health. I mean, it's all with the best intentions, of course. They love you. They care about you. Nobody wants to see the horror story. You be the statistic, the example that everybody hears about, you know?
Right.
So it's understandable. But, you know, at some point, you just got to stand your ground and hold true to yourself. And just what is calling to you deep in your gut has to be what you follow. Otherwise, what are we doing, you know?
Yeah, totally. Totally. So. And so do you feel like you came to that right away, like as soon as you found out you were pregnant, or did you kind of work your way to that?
No. Like I said, my background and my not animosity, but just adversity to the medical industry is my backbone already. So that might be harder for people who are coming from a place where they rely on the medical industry or they believe in it more than other people, you know?
Sure.
So it's really hard. I don't take Tylenol. I don't take over-the-counter medicine because I believe that strongly that stuff's just a sliding slope to another medication and another drug and another, you know? So that's where my mind is already. So if somebody has those hurdles to overcome, then of course their path and decision and process might be a little longer, you know?
Right. And did you have any other resources that you consulted? Like, you know, I don't think a lot of women know, you know, the dangers of ultrasound or any of the above. I mean, did you kind of research stuff as well, or were you already just like certain in your gut that this was the right thing to do?
I was certain in my gut, and then I wanted to research to you know, squash any doubts that I may have had from myself or from external sources.
Yeah.
Because it's the external sources of pressure and people trying to convince you that what you're feeling is wrong. We get that as women all the time anyway, from every angle. So I just wanted to confirm that and, you know, secure my beliefs. And so I studied and researched and just was a hound online and in forums and talking to people and, you know, that's what you want to do so that you have, you know, so you have some kind of comeback, I guess.
Comeback, sure.
Right. Sure. Word, but,
And did you, do you have any in particular you would recommend to women in the same position as you? Anything that comes to mind? Or just like online stuff?
Dr. Mama, is that the right? I'm so bad with names and titles, but Dr. Mama, is that the right?
I don't know. I don't know that one.
DrMama.org, I think, is one in particular that was really good. I have a ton of groups on my Facebook, you know, natural groups, natural birthing groups, breastfeeding groups. The Leaky Boob is a really good one for breastfeeding advocacy. Because, you know, after you have the baby and if you want to do anything natural, of course, you're going to get pressured for breastfeeding and blah, blah, blah.
Right. What about locally? Were there moms and friends you had that were support to you?
No. I'm out in Missouri, out in a small town. I'm originally from Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, funny.
Big city, a lot of people, a lot of support, networking, blah, blah, blah. And I came out here 5-6 years ago and I absolutely have nobody. No friends, no community. I don't vibe with the scene out here very much. So it was odd to me to find my midwife for my first birth because she was really up my alley.
Right.
But those people I've found are few and far between, at least, you know, in my search out here for 5 years. So no community.
Wow. Well, that's rough. So that's even more amazing because I think, you know, obviously community is what gets us through feeling like the oddball, you know, when we find other people. So
yeah. So my salvation's been online, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Fortunately and unfortunately, but yeah.
Well, as it is for many people, you know, I mean, hence these podcasts, you know, I think there's lots of women out there with nobody and no support and they're really looking for it. So that's why it's so important and so great that you can tell your story like this.
Thank you. Well, thank you for, you know, providing the platform because that's as important, the most important, to have the platform for people to speak and reach out to each other.
Yeah, it's true. Let's see, what was I going to ask you? How about, you know, during your pregnancy, your first pregnancy or your second, really, like what do you consider prenatal care? Because it's just so obvious to you, and I think to those of us that, you know, take authority over ourselves. But again, to lots of people listening, it's like a whole new idea. It's a whole new thing to not see somebody. And so they want to know, like, what do you do? Like, do you do the same things to yourself? Or what's your idea of prenatal care?
I've always taken prenatal vitamins for some reason. I've always taking them even as a teenager, just because I heard they help your hair grow. So I've always taken those, you know, maybe one a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then getting pregnant, I just kind of continued with that. This pregnancy, however, my second one, I didn't take very many prenatals. I took them when I felt like I needed them,
right,
if I felt depleted. But last time I took them religiously. So
right.
Obviously eating well. Cutting out sugars, wanting to exercise. I went on YouTube and researched a bunch of, you know, prenatal pregnancy exercises, blah, blah, blah. Being conscious of your diet is obvious. Eating fresh fruits, just researching, you know, what vegetables are good. Oh, herbs. I didn't take very many herbs last time. This time I took a whole bunch. Just because I learned more about which ones are safe for pregnancy.
Right.
And it's funny because when people go to the doctor or hospitals, so many women say that if you're pregnant, you can't take any herbs, you can't take anything. Everything's like off. I did everything with my first pregnancy and second that they tell you not to do. I had soft cheeses. I have cottage cheese, feta, you know, brie, everything. I ate sushi like mad.
Right.
Not for the first three months, you know, you kind of, but we have this Japanese couple out here and they were like, no, pregnant women, you eat sushi, you know?
Well, of course. Like, how ridiculous is it? Of course, you know, they're going to do that. And American women are so, pregnant women are so scared of everything that it's, it can be funny, almost funny.
Well, I'm a little extreme in my thoughts. You know, maybe some people might think this is a little too far to the, you know, one extreme, but I feel deep in my gut that our system and the medical industry and the way prenatal care is set up through the medical industry, it is designed to make you dependent on him from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Like, so, of course, deplete the woman of all the things that she should be eating, herbs that she should be taking, you know, because then she's going to have a higher chance of coming to you with all these problems that you're going to have a fix for that's going to line your pockets, you know?
Oh, sure. I mean, that may be extreme, I suppose, but not to me, not to probably a lot of the people listening. I mean, it's a business. And I think if women could just, you know, realize that it's not that you can't choose that if that's what you want or that's what you need, but just realizing, you know, the intent of the business, of any business, is exactly. to make money.
Yeah, just like, you know, go forward to eating your placenta. I mean, you know, it's surprising that they would not encourage that and that they discourage that and that they even try to keep women from keeping their placenta, legal hoops you have to go through in right. some hospitals, blah, blah, blah. But yet it's the one thing that, I mean, oh my goodness. But yet they'll smack you with, oh, well, you need these antidepressants and you need this drug for your postpartum, you know, right away.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole different set of beliefs. That's the easiest way I've come to talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, just different set of beliefs. So how did you find a birth attendant or a midwife or whatever? What questions did you ask to find somebody that was so supportive of your beliefs? Because, you know, that's pretty rare nowadays, mm-hmm. in midwife land, at least with all the licensing and rules and regulations, it's really hard to find somebody. And on top of that, you know, obviously you have to be really clear about what you want. And I think, mm-hmm. Women aren't always clear. They think a midwife is all the same that everybody, you know, so how did you, like, what kind of questions did you ask her to figure out that this was the person for you?
Well, we were searching midwives locally, in Missouri and who, you know, gosh, it's kind of fuzzy now, but I know that in her website, she was a Christian. She made it very clear that she was religious, mm-hmm. and we're not religious, so to speak, but we're definitely spiritual. Right. In there, she said, I cater to all lifestyles, hippies, granolas, freaks. And then she said, Christians, Methodists, Amish, Mennonite, blah, 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 blah. So she had the whole gamut. So seeing that she was open-minded to, she put even on her professional website, like hippies and freaks or something. I'm like, okay, I think this is the one. So that was kind of, you know, I was like, okay, I got a good feeling from her. And then when she said, like I said, the praying thing, when she goes, oh, I want to pray and just see if this is the right connection for us. And that was another ringer for me. I was like, okay, this woman kind of relies on her gut, her intuition, her guides, her spirit, whatever.
Right.
That was strong to me because I think that's something important to be connected to spirit and have that kind of connection, I guess. I mean, not everyone feels that way, but I did. And then when we met her, it was just the feeling that we got from her. I'm really into Native American spirituality, Native American culture, blah, blah. And so having her have that background also was a big, you know, she claims herself to be a half medicine woman. You know, she follows a lot of Native American medicine, philosophies, blah, blah. She incorporates that into her religion and faith.
Right.
So that spoke to me. I was just like, awesome.
Yeah.
And then her credentials were amazing. The person she studied under, her midwife, and who taught her and brought her into it, I don't know her name offhand. I'd have to find it. But she apparently was a really influential, not famous, but well-known, respected midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And then my midwife was somebody who, she changed the law. She helped, she was one of the main players in changing the law in Missouri, mm-hmm. to have there be independent midwives who don't need what is it?
Licensing.
Yeah, licensing. I think she was a certified midwife, but mm-hmm. she didn't need that whatever that is, that thing with the hospital, you know.
yeah, she wasn't a nurse and she wasn't affiliated with anybody medical as far as you knew. Yeah,
she made it where it was safe to practice in Missouri. She was mm-hmm. one of the head honchos, you know, doing the political activism for that.
Yeah, that's huge, and that's disappearing as we speak almost everywhere.
Yeah, so that spoke to me. So she was just an all-around powerful yet gentle yet awesome woman. And then we talked to her about the birth plan. How would you do this? And she was just very, you know, everything's your decision, Kara. This is your decision, your birth, your baby. She didn't believe in drugs. She didn't believe in interventions. She didn't believe, oh, another thing that was big was she said, I'm not going to check you. She goes, I don't think anybody, any pregnant woman should ever have anything going up inside of her. Nobody should ever need to poke and prod inside of a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
For her whole pregnancy. And that was a big one.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's just not mm-hmm. the popular belief nowadays. No. So that's really great. You found somebody like that.
I was so blessed and so thankful. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, your partner was on board, supportive of all of these decisions, and you guys were a team.
And that's important, too, because unfortunately so many women seek permission from their partners, which, you know, again, I'm kind of about, I get really aggro when I see women say, oh, my husband won't let me have mm-hmm. a birth. And I'm like, who, what, what?
No,
you're
I know.
The woman that is making this choice. You're the one, your birth canal responds to your stress level and your comfort level. He's not the one having the baby. He's your partner. Right. Yes, and you should confide in him and you guys should agree, but the ultimate decision, I'm sorry, lady, is yours, you know?
Right, right. And that's that's part of our power, you know? That's part of being the birther of this new life. I agree. I don't know often what to say to women that are having trouble in that area. I feel like that's a relationship problem and it's not a birth problem, you know?
And it's a relationship problem with themselves, a self-esteem problem, I think, exactly. too, because nobody can give or take your power away but you.
Exactly.
You know, and it we women, we look, we're, it's ingrained in us to look to our men for validation, look to our fathers for validation. It goes back all to that father issue stuff. But you know, I think ultimately, if the husband's not supportive, not comfortable, but the woman wants this and she knows she wants it, she should say, well, then I either have your support and you're with me or you can go somewhere else until the baby's born.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't dictate how she births.
Nope. I totally agree with you. It's too important. I mean, it's important how we, you know, as women, obviously birth on every level, physical, emotional, spiritual, but obviously it's hugely important, you know, in how these babies are brought in. So, you know, the guys, that are not liking parts of it, it's a bigger issue than that.
And,
And
respect to them. I mean, you know, respect to the men in our lives, if they're respectful to us, for sure, 100%. Mm-hmm. And help them see, bring literature, bring stuff, videos. There's so much information out there to be like, hey, honey, let's watch this, you know?
Sure.
But if he's going to be closed-minded to it, if he's just, you know, stuck in the mud, stuck in his way, then she needs to take charge, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I'm glad you had that support. That is a key element, as you say. So how was the first birth then? I mean, you don't have to tell a huge long story, but just, you know, having somebody there and not having been through birth before, what did you think when it was over? Was it just what you had pictured or wanted?
For the most part, it was a longer labor. Mm-hmm. I think I labored for 24 hours-ish.
Yeah.
Active pushing for about a little over 3 hours. So that's kind of long. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of the biggest blizzard snowstorm we'd had out here in 100 years. So the whole situation was crazy. We got friggin' news. Local newspapers wanted to cover it because we were the crazy family who had a home birth in the middle of the blizzard. So it was kind of crazy. It was I don't know why it took so long, why it was such a long birth, maybe because I'm a little older and I'd never had a kid, so I don't know.
Right.
Well, that can be
normal for a first time.
Sure, sure. Everything was wonderful. It turned out everything was great. There was one glitch in the system of everything. I really wanted a water birth, and we had the tub and a liner. She had the tub, my midwife, and we had the liner, but the liner was stuck in the trunk of the car that got ditched on the highway during the snowstorm.
Oh, no.
So we couldn't have our water birth. So I said during labor, I want to get in my tub, you know?
Right.
And this was, I think, reflecting back on it, this was the turning point in the labor was when I said, I want to get in my tub. I don't care if it's shallow, skinny, whatever. I want to be in the water.
Yep, that moment.
And this was the one thing that I was unhappy with my midwife, which is what solidified me having an unassisted, because even as good as my midwife was, she's still that little voice of intervention, that little nudge affected the entire labor, I think, for the rest of it. And she said, I don't think that tub is a good idea. I think you'll be uncomfortable and it'll be harder for me to check you. So right there was a turning point, even with this wonderful midwife, which I'll bless her till the end. She's great. She's wonderful, which is why I don't want to disclose her name, because I respect her, but I don't want whatever. But at that moment, when what I wanted to do was kind of, you know, shut down or just suggested, I froze. And I literally could not get off the floor, could not think of anything else I wanted to do. I felt like I was glued to the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard in labor.
Yeah, and because I didn't move for 4 hours after that, I didn't rock my pelvis. I didn't do any of the things that would help baby come down and get the shoulders through the pelvic region. Supposedly, the baby got stuck. Her shoulder got stuck on my pelvic bone. So my midwife says. So when the baby's head came out, we had it all on video, but she was only on my perineum for about, I don't know, maybe a minute, which is touchy, you know, it's kind of touch and go. And my midwife felt like she had to make the best decision there. And I personally feel like she kind of jumped the gun.
Right.
But she felt panicked, I guess, and didn't want to risk.
Sure.
So she went in there and she popped the baby out by the shoulders and I ripped really bad. Really bad.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the bummer. And I mourned about that for a long time.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest fear with this birth was I didn't want to tear. So, but other than that, everything was wonderful, you know?
Yeah. But that's a really great story. I know that, you know, when things like that happen at our births, we definitely have to heal from them. So it's not to downplay, you know, your experience at all. But from the standpoint of, you know, taking charge of your experience, I think a lot of us have had births like that where they are nearly perfect. And it's not about blaming because you invited her there.
Exactly.
You know, and I've done the same. And heck, I've been, you know, the birth attendant. And when you're that person, you are there, you know, you are there to make a decision if it needs to be made. So it's just a really tricky place to be. And yeah, I think it's awesome when you come out the other side and you say, okay, now I'm ready for the next step, because that's the only way that you truly are in charge of the experience, for better or for worse.
Yeah. And I feel like had I been allowed to even attempt it, if she had honored my request to attempt the bath, I would have realized if it was uncomfortable by getting in.
Sure,
you know what
course,
I mean? I would have been like, okay, this isn't working, get me out. And I feel like had I had that, not freedom, but just had I not been encouraged to not, my movement of getting in and out of the tub, that kind of movement is what you need to do to get the baby down and out and twisting and turning. So lifting your legs, moving your pelvis.
Exactly.
So that's what I feel in my gut. If I had been able to move the way I wanted to, even if it wasn't for the better, it would have moved the baby down. We wouldn't have had that situation. That's what I feel.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from a clinical point of view, I'd definitely agree. I mean, there's not a lot of stories of things like shoulder dystocias at unassisted births because, you know, it's generally that kind of situation where a woman is following someone else's lead or doesn't feel comfortable. And, you know, it's funny that those complications come out of sometimes someone actually being there, and unassisted birth gets the bad reputation sometimes for, oh, what if, but why are we not talking about things that are caused by interference?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's not even like intervention in the sense of, you know, something more hardcore. It's like just very minimal interference, you know, just a word, just a phrase, just a sentence, just a feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's huge. So I can totally see why that you know, with your background propelled you to doing it, just you and your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So was that was the second pregnancy any different, just knowing that you guys would be handling this by yourselves?
Yeah, it was faster. The first pregnancy, because we had the midwife appointments halfway through and we're just dwelling on it, it was the first one, all this stuff, it went by, you know, kind of slow, kind of long, I guess. The second one was really fast. I mean, I felt like I was 9 months pregnant, like, instantly. I was like, we didn't dwell on anything. We didn't, like, you know, I kept on going, we got to research this unassisted birth stuff. We got to do this. But we kept... We kept kind of not. I mean, I was, you know, researching, but not dwelling on it. I just, no checks, no appointments, no this or that. Time just flies, you know?
Right.
When you're not keeping track. And, you know, there were some apprehensions, of course. There was times when I broke down crying, going, I don't know if we can do this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you just push through it. Because I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to hate myself, you know? So.
Yeah. So how did you deal with fears or apprehensions that would come up?
I would whine to my partner first.
Yeah, always good.
Yeah. I would, you know, I would express my frustration. I'd allow the emotion to go through. I'd allow myself to feel it and not dwell on it, you know. I'd just be like, okay, I'm scared. I'm got to remember not to dwell on what I'm afraid of. Don't watch birth stories that exhibit things I'm afraid of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And what were some particular fears, if you don't mind? Sure.
The tearing obviously was the one. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how, you know, if you tore before, if it would tear again. I didn't know any of that stuff. So I researched that. I just researched everything that I was afraid of. That's what I learned from an unassisted birth group I'm in. They said, if you're afraid, research it until you're not afraid anymore.
Yeah.
Until you've got all the options. And then the other thing I was kind of afraid of was anything to do with the placenta, like hemorrhaging, like if the placenta didn't come out well or on time or...
Right.
You know, all those little things. So, placenta previa, all these things people talk about.
Right, the crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. That was the second one. I didn't want a hemorrhage. So we got some herbs, the old shepherd's purse and stuff like that to be wary.
Right.
That was the second. And then the third one was just positioning of the baby, I guess. I didn't want to have a transverse or,
right.
You know, kind of thing.
Right.
So I just researched all this, and then Spinning Babies is a website that teaches you how to handle any kind of complications in your birth, and if the baby was in a different position, you could twist them.
Right.
How?
And were you aware of, like, position and that kind of thing beforehand? Like, had you taught yourself that, or?
Well, from what my midwife taught me, I learned a lot from her about what you feel down below and up above. If you can feel feet in your ribs, or if you can feel a little bowling ball between your pelvis, you know, you're. But we got a fetoscope so I could hear the heart. And so when I got the heartbeat and I heard it way down below, I was like, okay, well, the heart's down low, so the head's down low.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, it's not rocket science, right?
No, I think totally. Yeah. And the feet, I kept feeling the feet in my ribs and the big bulge up top, which you can mistake for a head, but it's really the butt.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's really empowering. I love to help teach pregnant women that, or just show them that, or, you know, throughout a bunch of months, they totally get a handle on it. It's not hard. Yeah. And it's so empowering to be able to know what your baby's up to if you want to.
It's so neat. Yeah. You asked that another website. Another website I looked a lot into was Unhindered Living.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Unhinderedliving.com is like a straight up unassisted birth guide. How to handle any variation of normal, they call it, which people call complications. So.
Sure. Yeah, I have heard of that one as well. Cool. So then tell us a little bit more about the birth, just because that's kind of the icing on this cake is this last little guy's birth. I don't know, anything you want to share about it?
Sure. Everyone's questions and concerns, obviously people were even more upset with me having an unassisted.
Right.
I didn't tell as many people. I haven't even really announced it online yet. I'm getting ready to, that it was unassisted. But mama was definitely worried and mad. But a big concern is after the baby's born. So, okay, you're going to have your birth, blah, blah, blah. But then all these things that you're supposed to do to the baby after they're born, what about syringing their throat and getting the mucus out? What about this? Checking the heart? What about, you know, all these things? How are you going to cut the cord? But we didn't do anything to this baby. My first one, she actually suctioned my daughter on the perineum, which I read later was not really a good thing. So we didn't even use a bulb syringe. We didn't have to suction out any mucus. I just waited and let him cry. He cried right away. I started, the mucus plug, the bloody show, whatever. Happened about 3 days before actual labor.
Okay.
Because, you know, I was intimate with my partner, and then we had a bloody show, and then that was, I guess, the beginning of early labor.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel anything, really, and it was just Braxton Hicks-type contractions, really mellow. The day of labor, I was, like, feeling some contractions, but I was like, you know, I'm going to go to the store. So I went to, you know, I went to the store and drove around and walked around, and then I started feeling it. I was at the store. I'm like, oh, man, I'm feeling something. And I got home, and my partner's like, you know, I think you should go get some sushi. You really need the energy. You really need some sushi. And I'm like, okay. I kept telling him I was feeling these contractions, blah, blah, blah. And so we decided, should you go? Should you not go? Yeah, I'm going to go. So I went and I had my sushi. And at the end of my meal, I was having hardcore contractions.
Wow.
And so I drove home and I started having even more hardcore contractions. By the time I got to my neighborhood, I was in full blown labor. And so I came home, pounded on the door, and just went to it.
Yeah.
Went to it. I was breathing and grunting and groaning. It was really fast.
Yeah.
Contractions were right on top of each other for the whole time, which was really odd.
Right.
And I was pushing really soon. My partner was like, you shouldn't be pushing now. You shouldn't be pushing. And I was just like, get out of here.
I know what I'm doing.
Basically, I was like, I can't not push right now, man. So
yeah, your body just did it. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was pretty much, he just stayed downstairs with our girl for most of the time and checked on me. And I just couldn't take any sounds. I couldn't take being talked to. I couldn't even take anybody in the room. I was just like, no, leave, 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 you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was it. And then the water broke during labor, and he came out an hour after the water broke. And
wow.
Then the placenta was born a half an hour later, and we kept it in a bowl, kind of lotused it next to me for a few hours while we all rested because we were totally tired.
Yeah, yeah.
And burned the cord, which was another awesome thing.
Oh, that is awesome. That's a really cool tradition to have.
Yeah, and that makes the cord fall off really fast, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Wow. Well, that sounds beautiful and simple.
Simple. I was just surprised. I was just so surprised.
Yeah. Well,
and my daughter, I showed her a bunch of birthing videos because, you know, I didn't want her to be scared of the process.
Sure.
So we watched YouTube birthing videos, you know, and when I was crowning, when the head was coming, she wanted to come see, and she was like, oh, I want to see. So she gets up in there. but she got a little nervous at the end there, and she wanted a hug.
Yeah.
And she was like, a hug. So I said, go give her a hug, Daddy. He went and gave her a hug, and boom, the baby came out. And he comes back, and he goes, oh, shit, there's the baby.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I mean, that's how it should be in its simplest form, you know? It's a family event, and I don't know what's happened all these years where we've gotten to another place, but really, that's my vision, too. That's what I hold for, you know, just healthy women that want to take charge of their experiences to have a, you know, a family event, have a family birth, as Carla Hartley says.
For sure.
Yeah.
I just hope that women will just push past their fears if they really want it, that they would really explore it and really look at their options and just, you know, give themselves that gift, because it really is a gift. It's like the best thing you can do for yourself, you know?
Yeah, and for your baby, and, you know, for your daughter to witness that. There's so many levels of it being a positive thing for future generations, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing. That's just truly inspiring, and I think people will just love hearing your story.
Thank you so much. I hope people can feel.
Yeah.
Awesome.
If you have a written birth story or anything else you want to share, we can certainly kind of attach that to this podcast if people are interested in, in reading that, and if you are willing to share it. If not, then this will be good enough, this inspiring chat with you.
I haven't written anything down yet, but I'm going to be making my YouTube video. I kind of document that stuff on there.
Sure.
So I'll make my birth video and I can send that to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's tell everybody that your baby's all of what, 2 weeks old right now. So it's perfectly acceptable that there is nothing written down, at least for a while yet. But yeah, just anybody that's listening, if there's anything to be attached, then just kind of look for it. And if Kara's willing to share, then we'll attach that kind of to the podcast so people can read in more detail if they want to.
Yay.
Okay.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That was wonderful.
Yay.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.